where there are opportunities for larger churches or other Christians to partner with them, to give them support, to perhaps deploy a worker into those situations, has happened in a few places now, then there's lots of opportunities for that to happen. But again, it's just the kind of need just seems to dwarf, you know, the kind of the resources that are available.
Hello and welcome to Independence FIEC podcast. My name is Adrian Reynolds, Head of National Ministries for FIEC, and I'm here with Andy Hunter, who is our Director for Scotland. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Adrian.
And who's very kindly hosting us in his house in Glasgow, and Rachel Sloan, who's our Director for Women's Ministry, who's come all the way from Edinburgh to Glasgow. How long does that take?
It's about an hour in the car.
Great. Well, thank you.
5 minutes on the train.
Thank you both for joining us.
No
We're
problem.
Also here with Fern. And if a dog suddenly appears at the window, if you listen to episode one, and you enjoyed episode one of our little Scottish adventure, Fern was making quite an appearance in the room. She's now out of the room in the garden, but she may make an appearance at the window. I hope so, because I think it livens up the podcast. you're both very interesting guests, of course. I like to say that.
Oh, thanks.
It's lovely to have you.
But we cannot compete with the dogs.
So. But actually, it does take the FIEC podcast to a whole new level. Now, we're here for a kind of second bite at the cherry, second grab at the thistle. I don't know what the expression is, but here we are to talk about Scotland, and especially to think about some of the challenges of gospel work in Scotland, some of the needs. My heart really is that I'd love people to be praying for gospel work all over the United Kingdom. And I think that includes, Scotland. I really want people to be thinking about and praying for Scotland. So I'm hoping that as we outline what some of the needs are and some of the challenges are, that will really help people pray in an intelligent way and feel a connection actually with what's going on that perhaps they don't necessarily feel at the moment. So let's make a start. Rachel, let me start with you. Let's talk about cities first of all.
Yep.
When we talk about cities in Scotland, we're talking about what, Glasgow and Edinburgh, the two biggest cities by some distance. Compared to everyone else. What comes after that? What have we got?
Dundee, Aberdeen, and then Inverness.
Okay, so those kinds of places.
Yeah.
What are going to be some of the challenges with ministry? So you're both in cities. I realise they're different cities, but you're in Edinburgh City Centre Church. What are some of the challenges with city centre ministry in Scotland? Would that be the same as pretty much any other city in the UK, or is there something particular about Scotland? Just give us a feel for what that looks like.
I imagine there's lots of the similar challenges. Often a transient population. So kind of students moving in and out, people moving for work. So quite a lot of kind of transfer within that. I guess then a lot of people would travel in to the city.
Right, so you're sort of dealing with people who aren't necessarily immediately local to the church.
So especially for somewhere like Charlotte, where we're right in the city centre.
By a tramline.
So it's not kind of the same kind of community in quite the same way that you might have in some other places. I guess a lot of similar issues in terms of secularisation, and people just busy working lives and the kind of the challenges that can bring to church life as well.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about schemes. We hear quite a lot about schemes. Mm-hmm. Tell us, Andy, you know, obviously 20 schemes, church planting, revitalisation, movement, with lots of connections with FIEC. Just tell us what a scheme is kind of how they feature in cities.
Yeah. So a scheme in Scotland is like a housing estate.
Okay.
And particularly housing schemes, kind of post-war developments, often become places of quite high social needs, deprivation, a lot of social housing. So it can be mixed, but they have maybe a disproportionate number of kind of challenges in terms of economics and social problems and issues there. But those are often very unreached areas. Often you can correlate the evangelical churches against middle-class prosperity. So often parts of the city that are better served relatively with evangelical churches tend to be more middle-class, better off, and often areas where there are more social needs, it's a bit of a desert really when it comes to good Bible churches, or indeed sometimes just churches of any type at all.
And particularly Edinburgh and Glasgow, or will you find schemes in other places too?
Probably most of the cities, most of the cities.
So the west of Scotland has the highest kind of level, or, you know, in terms of number of kind of schemes or population that live in schemes. But every city has kind of schemes and areas that meet that kind of profile.
So 20 Schemes doing a great work. Started in Edinburgh, is that right? Yeah. I think in Nidri, and has kind of spread out, and now doing work in Glasgow, where you are as well, isn't that? Is
and
that right,
Dundee and Dundee. Inverness.
And they particularly created a kind of new hub in Glasgow in terms of trying to sort of reach and plant into and revitalise churches in the west of Scotland, because it's such a huge area of need in its own right. So it's kind of, I don't know if it's quite twinned with Nidri, but certainly there's a kind of increasing and expanding hub in Glasgow for that work.
Right. And what about when you move out of cities, either of you really, you know, what's the kind of gospel need? How does that shift and change in terms of what's going on?
I think one of the challenges there is just geography. So you have kind of quite small kind of population centres, sometimes quite isolated, or just pockets of people kind of spread about. So it's trying to provide kind of gospel churches and ministry where you actually don't have a huge amount of population, which obviously then brings economic challenges in terms of how do you support somebody and people travelling. Do you have like lots of very, very small kind of churches, or do you try and consolidate in particular areas? So I think that's the kind of ongoing kind of challenge that churches of all types are having to wrestle with.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me about driving into Edinburgh is you kind of, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere and suddenly you're there.
Yep.
There isn't sort of urban band
that
you get maybe in some of the major cities and conurbations in England and South Wales maybe also. It does feel quite abrupt that you go from being in a city to not being in a city. Is that a fair assessment, or is it just the A1 basically?
I think it's the roads into Edinburgh that particularly make it feel like that when you're coming from Edinburgh from the south. If you were like I said in the first podcast, with the central belt, so I would say now that Edinburgh and Glasgow are kind of merging into the towns in between,
along that motorway
between the two places, you would see much more of that kind of, but I guess again when you start to head north from either Edinburgh or Glasgow, you kind of have, you see where the edges are of the cities, and then head out to the kind of much more kind of rural kind of the small towns in the middle of not much else, with the small churches I guess as well.
And just before we leave cities, I guess we were describing in the last episode about how cities are changing culturally, becoming much more mixed in terms of demographics. What kind of challenge does that have for the church? I guess the same in lots of places, but is that a particular challenge in Scotland, do you think?
I guess that it will be common across kind of any UK city to some extent. I mean, one of the things you're seeing in somewhere like Glasgow, I'm sure it's true of other cities, is you are starting to see a kind of repopulation of city centres.
Right.
Because as kind of retail space has collapsed and businesses need less office space moving out, you're seeing quite a lot of residential kind of developments in cities. And I think part of the plan for Glasgow, for example, is very much to kind of encourage that repopulation to bring life back to the city, because a lot of the business and retail traffic has kind of left it otherwise. And of course, one of the challenges, just small but not insignificant practical problems that city centre churches have, is the dreaded Sunday parking charges, which are the blight of quite a number of congregations now as they've been extended out. But in terms of diversity, I mean, it's interesting with Scottish population, so this may do my stato bit again. The Scottish population has risen at the last census, the 2022 census, which was a year later than the England and Wales census.
Was that just to make a point, or what was the difference?
Well, it was partly because they took a decision in Scotland because of COVID to postpone it for a year. But it's risen by about kind of 2.5%, 3%, which is significantly less than the increase in England and Wales, which I think is about 6% or something of that kind of nature. And actually, if it wasn't for immigration, the Scottish population would have fallen by about 50,000 in that time. So we talked in the last episode about how immigration has been picking up pace in Scotland in recent decades. And that certainly has kind of filled the gap in terms of the population, which is growing increasingly older in Scotland, certainly the kind of indigenous kind of white population. So almost 20% of people in Scotland now are over 65, which has grown from 12% 50 years ago. Significant kind of older demographic there. So there's a challenge for churches in that, in terms of thinking about that age group and how do you reach people there, that it's not just all about the young people, but, you know, there's a big swathe of people there now. And the other sort of implication of this, of the immigration thing, is that England, which has higher kind of levels of immigration, I think the church in England had got a bit of a shot in the arm from that.
Often people coming from abroad
are more likely to be Christians or have a Christian background or open to faith in general. So Scotland hasn't had quite the same shot in the arm that English churches have had. But that is changing now, and we're seeing a lot more ethnic minority churches springing up, particularly in cities, but right across the country, to be honest.
Yeah. Let's talk about unreached places. So I've got here in front of me the map of Scotland. I mean, it's an enormous country, isn't it? And actually, when you kind of lay on the roads over the top of it, you realise there aren't that many ways to get around.
No.
Unless you're Rishi Sunak and you've got a helicopter. you know, actually, it takes quite a long while to get from place to place.
Yep.
So there are some significant places, aren't there, without Christian witness now, gospel witness. Is that fair to say?
Population centres. I mean, it's difficult to say in terms of, you know, particular kind of geographical areas, because there's stuff going on in various forms and places. Yeah. And there's been quite a lot of stuff happening under the radar, which hasn't always been picked up by the traditional kind of church census. So, as I say, you know, ethnic minority fellowships, groups sort of springing up everywhere. And often they're not really been that visible to the established kind of church or the kind of existing church, because, you know, they've started in people's living rooms and shops and, you know, kind of halls, you know, but they're there. Actually, it's interesting, the number of those fellowships now, you know, is quite remarkable, really. So at that grassroots level, you know, God is at work, you know, these seeds of what we hope will be future kind of gospel lights and witnesses and growing churches, you know, are there. And as Scotland becomes increasingly diverse, particularly bearing in mind the kind of base of these churches, the Scottish church is inevitably going to become much more diverse.
Right. But if you went to a reasonably sized town, you know, if you went to a St Andrews or a Greenock, I don't know, or a Helensburgh, would you always find an evangelical church?
Sorry, Rachel.
I mean, St Andrews is probably an unusual example.
I just listed places I knew, as you can probably tell.
Well, that's a university town, so it's have some stronger churches there.
I mean, I guess you have the dynamic of this, you know, the Free Church of Scotland will have, in a lot of these more rural places, a presence.
Right.
It may be a very small church in some places, but there will be, I guess, an evangelical church there if there is a Free Church. But yes, there will be some places where the nearest, I guess, evangelical church is, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 miles away. And as the denominations have changed and shifted, you can have less confidence that the church that is in the village will be evangelical.
Right.
Some may be, but I think you can have less confidence. Yeah. And so for some people who are keen to get involved in that kind of church like that, they do have to travel.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's probably more so in the very small towns and villages. If you're in within reach of, say, Glasgow, Edinburgh, you know, anywhere up the East Coast in that sense, then you're probably close enough to a church that it doesn't feel too far away. Okay. And there are kind of churches developing. But once you get beyond that, I think into much more the Highlands proper, as it were, that's going to be much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the complexity of it, because sometimes as the crow flies, if you go to a kind of like a middle-sized town like a Kilmarnock or a Greenock or somewhere, there will be evangelical churches there. But relative to population, there's huge population densities which, although as the crow flies, they might only be a mile or 2 miles away from, they're not in that area. You know, they're not on the doorstep, they're not in that community. So there's very significant pockets of community where there's no kind of evangelical kind of witness or church there. So if people who are motivated enough to go into the town centre and look for something, they might find one, or to go to another part of town that happens to be blessed with something. But there's just huge numbers of communities where there's nothing at all.
And some of that's geographical, in the sense that, you know, Scotland is a big place. People are willing to travel for some reasons, but the 40 odd miles there is between Glasgow and Edinburgh, that's a big distance in that sense, which it might not seem in the same way in some parts of England. So being willing to, like Andy said, move beyond your little community to find that church is much harder. So it's those people particularly who don't yet know Jesus. They're not motivated, they're not able to, they're not looking for it. So having a church
in their
community.
It's one thing for a Christian, isn't it, to go out looking for a church. Yeah. It's another for someone to wake up, you know,
and go and find something.
And think, you know, I really want to find a church. Let me just see what the nearest church is. Chances are it might not be evangelical. Might have to do some hunting around.
And
just tell me, Andy, a little bit about revitalization. What part does that have? So from what you're describing, where there have been lots of churches and they've collapsed, is there a strong case for revitalization being part of kind of the opportunity that exists in
I think that's a huge need and opportunity because the Scottish church across the board is a kind of is an aging church. Now, of course, there's lots of exceptions to that, you know, and you can point to individual congregations. But again, if you look at the kind of stats, you know, the kind of Brierley consensus 2016, which is kind of a little bit dated now, but it's probably the last set of more kind of robust figures we have. It estimated, I think, at that time that I think it was like 36% or something of Scottish churchgoers, and this is across the board from Roman Catholic all the way through to every type of church, were over 65. At that time, over 65s in Scotland were round about kind of 18%, something like that. These are rough figures, I can't remember precisely. But basically, the conclusion, the outcome of that was that the Scottish church was twice as elderly as the population as a whole, you know?
Okay.
So in terms of a demographic time bomb, and you see that, you go to lots of churches which are really kept going and supported by a more senior congregation, very faithful people, but they're getting to that latter end of life, you know, and some have still got a bit of energy, but that's obviously going to fade. So in the next 10, 20 years, unless they're replaced with a younger generation, then they're going to close.
And often harder for them to adapt because things are deeply ingrained. It just becomes self-fulfilling, doesn't it?
And lots of those congregations, you know, want, you know, to prosper, obviously. They want the church to grow. They would be open to making changes, you know, some more than others, but, you know, but where's the help going to come from? You know, how do they do that? And therefore, where there are opportunities for larger churches or other Christians to partner with them, to give them support, to perhaps deploy a worker into those situations, has happened in a few places now, then there's lots of opportunities for that to happen. But again, it's just the kind of need just seems to dwarf, you know, the kind of the resources that are available.
In terms of need, Rachel, just tell us some of the things Charlotte have been doing in terms of church planting and partnering and helping out, because that just gives us an idea of some of the needs that there are. What are some of the things that Charlotte have been up to in the last few years?
Well, I guess particularly thinking about the guys that we've had training with us. So Martin has gone down to a church in Hoyk, so that's in the Scottish borders.
I now... I don't mind revealing my ignorance. Hoyk is spelled H-O-W-I-C-K.
H-A-W-I-C-K,
It's pronounced Hoyk. I know that now. So that's just the Scottish side of the border, is that right?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. I probably couldn't tell you exactly where it is, but it's in the borders.
Oh, I don't feel quite so bad now.
And so...
It's a rural town.
Rural town, small kind of market town. There's quite a few of them, similar in style in the borders. And I guess was going down there to be the associate minister, but the pastor who was there had to step down through ill health, so Martin took over. And just again, just a slow work of revitalising, building that up, strengthening,
growing. These things aren't
growing.
A quick fix, are they?
No, and a few of our members moved down with Martin over the past couple of years to be part of that work there as well. So that's been really exciting just to kind of see that. We've been involved in a few church plants in Edinburgh with Hope City. Help support Gracemount, one of the 20 schemes churches as well, and then Adam in Queensferry, so kind of developing more around here, but then also partnering with Hope Church in Aviemore and kind of getting that off the ground and kind of encouraging that as well.
I want to hear the story of Aviemore, because it is a great story, actually, isn't it, of partnership and getting things going. And a good example, actually, of somewhere that probably most people have heard of, Aviemore. And probably don't have much idea what kind of place it is. So just paint a picture for us, Andy, what kind of place Aviemore is, and why did it need a church?
very much a kind of tourist town. Sure. That would be the big kind of core kind of industry, part of the economy there would be hospitality, because you're in Central Highlands, so you've got water sports, you've got climbing, you've got hiking, you've got mountain
biking. I'm looking at my map. In terms of north to south, east to west, bang in the middle.
Right in the middle. Edge of the Cairngorms, right in the middle. And then in winter, you've got skiing, you know, snow, but you know, you've got a kind of skiing.
Until global warming.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not guaranteed, but you know, there's potential for skiing there. So basically, it was a kind of, it was one of those classic things. It was more or less like a railway sidings back in the 60s on the back of being a great kind of tourist kind of hub holiday kind of destination, it has grown and grown and continues to expand up the kind of Spey Valley there, so some of the other towns as well either side of it. So a growing population, built a new hospital there recently, a new primary school, they've even got a kind of Costa there now, which is a sign of a
even got a Costa so
you know?
The downhill slide has begun is what you're saying.
Well, I think church planters should just look to see where Costa are opening shops, because that's where the population is, isn't it? You know, they're often far ahead of us in terms of knowing where growth is. So it's been growing, but and there's a Church of Scotland there, a couple of other kind of other churches, but with the growing population, really felt by some of the people there was a real need for a kind of, you know, another kind of Bible-centred, Bible-teaching, evangelical kind of mainline church, reaching out to community, particularly with lots of hospitality workers, you know, there that come just to work there and so on. So a few years ago, FIC organised a mission forum in Edinburgh just to gather people together from across Scotland and say, look, where are there opportunities for gospel work, church planting, mission, that perhaps the people in that situation aren't able to take forward, but if we all club together, if we all got behind one or two projects, we could maybe make happen together. And there's a couple came to that, Eric and Emma Thompson, who running a hotel in Aviemore, and they said, there's this need, I think, for a new gospel church in Aviemore. And in God's providence, they were connected by some American friends who were across at that day, and they said, we'd love to support that. So they were to put a bit of kind of finance in. We formed a little team, myself and some other FIC folks and various other parties, and you know, we tried to work out a budget to sort of raise funds. Various FIEC churches and others committed to kind of crowdfund it, really. So we said to churches, you know, could you allocate £2,000, £3,000, £4,000 of your mission budget for the next, you know, 5 years towards Aviemore? And we were able to sort of crowdfund from churches a kind of budget, which allowed us to go then and get a pastor planter, Kenny Rogan, who was an assistant pastor down in London, but from the north of Scotland originally. And he came, took on the challenge, and the church has really found its feet over the last few years. It's kind of grown. It meets in the local primary school on Sunday afternoons, which is great, because a lot of people in Aviemore work in hospitality, so they have to work on Sunday morning. They're making beds, they're making breakfast. So if you want to invite them to church and they can come, then Sunday afternoon is probably a better time. And they started a toddlers group. So it's just been great from those kind of first beginnings. It's been great that FIC was a little part of that story in terms of being a catalyst there. But lots of others, of course, have come together to make that happen. And there is now Hope Church Aviemore is now up and running in Aviemore.
There is hope in Aviemore. It's good to hear. And I guess there are other places like Aviemore that have a similar need. And it makes me want to ask a question, which I'm trying to ask without any prejudice whatsoever. I just want to know the answer. Can you be English and plant a church in Scotland? Come work in church in Scotland, or is that going to be a challenge for you in some places?
I don't think really. I think it's a personality thing, isn't it? Sometimes it's going to be a class thing, I guess. But actually, there's lots of, you know, English brothers, American brothers, Irish brothers,
so someone
European brothers.
Someone with my bubbly personality and charming smile would be in there.
I mean, FIC churches are being kind of well led by Americans, you know, English, Welsh, Romanian kind of pastors and leaders and women's workers. So, yeah, you know, that's not a kind of barrier. I think that's down to the individual, really.
And tell us a little bit, Rachel, about just, you know, we heard about the collapse of denominations and things. Is that an opportunity for Christians, you know, actually, as other churches, you know, I mean, it sounds to me like lots of churches are closing, lots of buildings are closing. Is that an opportunity for evangelicals to grasp, do you think?
I think so. I mean, I guess it's a recognition that, to a degree, as Andy said in the first podcast, the church has been refined. So as you meet someone who's a Christian, nominalism is on the decline, so you're more likely to meet people who are truly evangelical, born again, which is exciting. And I think it's increased the need for, but also the desire for partnership across different kinds of churches. So I think, again, in the past, when some of the denominations were a lot stronger, everyone worked in their own little lane, in their own little kind of group, and you knew who was in your tribe, in your group. But actually now, because when the numbers are smaller, you have to work with other people. Yeah. And so
it forces you into those kind of collaborations.
Yes. Uh-huh. And actually that just makes it more effective to reach people when you have had the mixture of people gathering together, for example, Hope in Aviemore, and then even with the partnerships amongst 20 schemes with FIC churches, Free Churches of Scotland, and developing that round the way. It's been really exciting and helpful. So
I'd like to say, by the way, that my wife and I love watching Gone Fishing, which is a show on BBC with Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse. They have a dog that comes along with them called Ted, who just sits there and watches them. And Fern, I thought, might be the equivalent of Ted, might become the new Independence mascot. I'm not sure that I'm fully going to embrace that as Fern.
No, let's not do it again.
I think this dog's going to have its own podcast eventually.
I think so. Just a serious point to finish in terms of challenge, Andy, let me ask you about this, because we do see something of a leadership crisis in evangelicalism, I think, which is kind of multifaceted, isn't it? We've seen some poor examples of leadership, which has, I think, has kind of corrupted church leadership as a kind of something to be thought of as noble in many ways. But also, I think the pipeline of new leaders coming through seems to be fairly small. You're trying to get people to serve as elders in the local church or whatever. Is that replicated up here in Scotland as well? Are the same challenges existing there?
I think so. I mean, this is a bit anecdotal, so I don't really have a lot of kind of...
You haven't got a stat for
me. I don't have kind of a
slightly disappointed
some tried and tested data, unfortunately. But certainly my kind of perception would be, and I think it's shared by other people, is there are less kind of able candidates presenting for ministry than in previous maybe decades, going back, you know, last 20 years or so. Now, that could be a bit of a COVID hangover. Obviously, the training and recruitment model is changing a little bit, often with people going into kind of larger church training pipelines and being deployed that way, rather than just, you know, going to college themselves and then looking for a job off their own back. But I think there are challenges there. I think there's financial challenges for people in terms of being able to support themselves in situations where there's maybe not a great support base in terms of smaller churches that have those kind of funds. I do think partly because of what you have said in terms of some of the kind of scandals or kind of issues around leadership, that any kind of romanticism that people might have had about church leadership's always been tough. We know that, don't we?
Yeah.
And people always acknowledge that. But perhaps there was a bit more romanticism about it. I think a lot of that has been well and truly scrubbed away in recent years, hasn't it? You know? So if for various kind of reasons church leadership looked a bit unattractive, you know, previously, I think for some people it'll look a little bit even more unattractive, which is a shame, because the need is there. And we don't want the bad examples to kind of then deter the people who have a genuine heart for ministry. So the encouragement is to kind of push through that. We've been humbled. We've been really humbled across the board, haven't we? And that's probably a good thing for us. And maybe we've had to recalibrate, you know, our kind of expectations and view of ministry, but maybe in a way that actually will be much more open for blessing.
It's a kind of refining as well, isn't it, in the same way the church has been. And Rachel, I suppose there's a double kind of whammy there when it comes to women serving in ministry, because in the last podcast you described how, you know, more churches are beginning to think about releasing women to serve, either in paid or but recognised capacity, which is a really good thing. And yet you've got this pressure on leadership coming the other way. But overall, it sounds as though it's an encouraging picture when it comes to women serving in ministry.
It's getting there.
It's slow progress.
Yeah. And I think it's encouraging churches to see that this is a vital part of church life, is to have women involved, whether it's in a paid role or just even a recognised role. And it fully demonstrates what we want men and women to be doing in ministry. So the more it can be happening, and even with the pressures that there are on, I guess, small churches and the money, the pressures that come with that, even just finding ways to encourage and train women, I think will only further help the ministry in Scotland and the gospel work.
Great. Well, listen, Andy and Rachel and Fern, the springing spaniel, thank you so much. I almost feel as though I've had a dream, and a man and a woman from Scotland appeared to me in the dream and said, come and help us. Mm. It sounds like, you know, it's great opportunities, great place gospel need. And people, as they're thinking, perhaps people are listening to this, thinking about going into ministry. You've got people in your church thinking about going to ministry. Don't just think about where you are. Mm-hmm. If you're not in Scotland already, think about Scotland.
Yeah,
great
yeah,
place to
definitely.
Come and serve. Yeah. Great
is.
Place to come and live. Free tuition fees and free prescriptions. What more could you want?
And sunshine sometimes.
And sunshine sometimes. Thank you so much for your wisdom and insight. Thanks, Stato, for the stats. That's been really helpful. And Andy and Rachel, thanks for joining
us.
You. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do rate and review. It helps people find us. And we look forward to catching up with you again soon.